Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off. Imagine a toy so iconic it practically wrote the playbook for pleasure. Allow me to introduce or reintroduce you to the Magic Wand, aka the Cadillac of Vibrators. The Magic Wand Original is a trusted companion in the journey of joy, whether it's your first time chasing an orgasm or you're looking to give your partner a spine-tingling erotic massage. The Magic Wand should be your go-to with powerful rumbles and several different rhythms and patterns. It's no wonder the Magic Wand has scooped up accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I'm so enamored with mine, I've customized my bedside table just to keep it within arm's reach at all times. But the magic doesn't stop with the original Magic Wand. The Magic Wand family has grown over the years, offering a variety of models to suit every lifestyle. Go cord-free with the Magic Wand Rechargeable. Embrace compact power without compromising intensity with the Magic Wand Mini. I love this mini. Or the Micro, which is just teeny tiny and really powerful. Or enjoy a range of sensations with the Magic Wand Plus. Each model delivers the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original a legend. So are you ready to experience the magic? Visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to enchant pleasure seekers around the globe. That's sexwithemily.com/magicwand. Magic Wand, more than just a vibrator. You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversations around sex. We are celebrating my 15th anniversary of the podcast here at Sex with Emily. So on this episode, I talked to three of my earliest co-hosts and colleagues, and now very dear friends from Sex with Emily over the last 15 years, Dr. Drupinsky, Menace, and Anderson. It was fun to reminisce with each of them and talk about what's changed since I started in 2005, where we're at now, and what hasn't changed. I mean, we still have a long way to go until we've got a bottle of lube on every nightstand, am I right? First, we talked to Anderson, who is an engineer on Loveline, but we got really close when we used to tape Sex with Emily after hours, and I remember recording and all the madness that came with it. We talk about how much we miss our banter, even if Anderson gets a little inappropriate at times, and also hear all about the movie he has out on Amazon Prime right now. Then I chat with Menace, who's recording from his closet, you know, now that COVID has him stuck at home, and we hear about all the radio work he's doing and the love advice he's taken with him since the show. Then stick around, because Dr. Drew and I talk about the history of Loveline, what it really means to be attracted to someone, and how do you actually make relationships work. We get into his thoughts on COVID, vaccines, and how long we're going to be stuck wearing these masks. All this and more, you can find me at all platforms at Sex with Emily. Be sure to listen and like and subscribe and share with your lovers and friends. Stick around.
My wife and I, we don't have anything in common, but we do hate things together.
One of my very first hand jobs, my leg kicked violently.
You go, you look up an STD online, you Google it. I'm now an expert in chlamydia. You're not.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Jason Cohen was a radio engineer working at K-Rock FM during Loveline. So he had been there for 17 years. And I met him because I started co-hosting Loveline. And we just had a great banter.
Em was going to get a dog.
Rescue.
She had a dog. Right. Oscar was his name. Mm-hmm. Right?
I don't even remember. Yeah.
And she was on camera for some reason, I guess promoting, like, you know, dog adoption. And they came out to present Oscar to Emily.
I never met him before until
never
that
met
moment.
Him. And this is going to be her dog, actually, like her vet friend.
I've been, I think, like, FaceTiming with them, right?
Yeah. She's all excited. As the dog is being handed to you, Oscar reaches out and grabs the nose of, was it the host of the show?
His
plastic
assistant.
Surgery needed to be done.
Yep.
Yeah.
Grabbed her nose, latched on.
Oh, her. Yeah. It was a her. I didn't know
her.
That.
It was assistant Tim. And so anyway, I didn't adopt that dog.
So that dog didn't go home with Emily because she likes her nose too much.
He hosts several podcasts such as The After Disaster, The Film Vault, and Cinematics. He also makes films under his company Cold Cockle Productions. His movie Groupers is available on Amazon Prime and he has a YouTube channel in development. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Anderson Cowan. Hi, Anderson.
What is up, Em? It's so good to see you. It really is good to see you. It's funny because I think about you all the time, but I don't realize how much I actually miss you until I see you.
That's how I felt when I saw you. I screamed. I was like, Anderson!
It's occurred to me on more than one occasion that, you know, you took a lot of risks associating yourself with me because I am a bit of a live wire and I do push a lot of buttons and I am a bit of a liability. So I know that some of your producers in the past have kind of had off-air conversations with you. Like, I know you and Anderson are friends, but some of the things he says on our show just aren't our brand. And I don't know if it's really wise. So I appreciate you standing by me. I do.
Of course. I love you. We should probably just edit it out.
Yeah, you did. You used to stop. And like you had one producer who actually stopped the show. Like, and we were recording. Like, we weren't even live. And she's like, sorry, we have to stop. And she had a little talking to with me about how I can't say.
Would you remember what you said?
It was about a presidential debate involving Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And I suggested that a spoof porn would be pretty entertaining. And then I think I was putting words in his mouth to say to her, and Madison was not happy. She was very, very. And then there's the whole discussion that we had about uncircumcised penises, and that really went wrong for your show. Not so much me because I got up and left, but then I guess that the phone calls and emails continued about my attitude towards circumcision. So.
Oh my God, Anderson, that's so funny. Okay, so Groupers, your film. Now that it's on Amazon Prime.
Listen to me. Adam Carolla has watched it. And you know my relationship with him is very prickly, right?
I can't believe you got him to watch it and have you on the show.
Yeah, he watched it and he had me on the show. He gave it a good review. And my good friend Em, and I've said this before, all the years that I spent on Loveline and all the different people that I worked with on that show, all the revolving door of co-hosts and screeners and stuff, you were the most supportive. And we just clicked better than anybody else that I worked with on Loveline. You were... a terrible influence in encouraging me to steal from the company's office supplies reserved.
You felt bad printing your script. And I said,
printing like multiple
K-Rock
scripts there.
It's going to be okay if you print your script. I wasn't saying K-Rock's steal still stuff.
They might
it
come
was
back.
Like midnight. And I'm like, you can print your script. But I also told you we would sit outside and talk. And I said, go for it. You will make it happen. Like, just keep going with it.
You were
just
there. Yeah. You were, I was chewing Find your ear people. About bending your ear about all the rewrites I was doing. You were right there in the trenches once again when I was really, you know, bringing this thing together. And now it's all done. It's cooked. I feel like a little red hen. You got to watch the movie. It's available on Amazon Prime now. It is a polarizing movie, and it's about homophobia. And the gist of it is we learn that she's a grad student. So she's like in her, you know, mid to early 20s. And she goes to a bar and she kidnaps these two high school homophobic jocks. And they think they're going to have a threesome with her, but she overpowers them with a taser and a whole bunch of stuff happens. And she gets back to the house with an abandoned house and she strings them up at the bottom of an empty pool. And they come to and she says, here's the deal. You two think that homosexuality is a choice and you're always giving my little brother shit saying that that you think it's a choice. Why would you choose to be gay? Well, you get to prove your theory. You guys don't get out of here until you're gay for each other. And they have to become gay for each other in the bottom of the pool. And that's the jumping off point. And then the rest of the movie happens.
I think it's brilliant. I love you, Anderson Cowan. Thank you for being here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me, Em. I miss you so much.
Next, we have Menace. Menace and I go way back. I mean, Menace, I met in 2006. I'd gotten a live radio show, and he was assigned to my show. At the time, Menace was an up-and-coming, you know, struggling radio DJ sleeping on the floor at the radio station. So, well, who better to host a nighttime sex show than Menace? He went on to be my co-host for years on Sex with Emily.
A memory just came into my head right now, and I've never shared this other than talking about this. One of my very first hand jobs where I came to, completion.
Right.
My leg kicked violently.
Menace is currently known for The Woody Show. It's a morning show which you can find syndicated all over the country right now and in Canada. He also does a podcast with his coworkers called What's New Pod, and he's at Menace on all social media. I'm here with Menace.
What is up, Emily?
The man by what? He doesn't need any other name. It's like Madonna.
Yeah, true. Menace. Just a single name.
I know I've asked you this before, but now we haven't been doing the show together probably in about 3 years consistently. I have no sense of time. What have you taken from it? What have you learned over the 15 years, like in your relationship?
I have this line that I got from you, and I do quote you on the radio with it. I say communication is the lubrication. That's absolutely true, you know, because if you're just not communicating at all, nothing happens. You waste so much time. We always talked about wasting time if you're in a relationship that you're not happy with. Like, just get out, you know, get out of it. Don't, you know, sit there for another year, 2 years wasting your time. Or if you just broke up, don't be sad, you know, just
move on.
Yeah. You got to get over to get under, or whatever that term or that saying is.
You got to get over to get under.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's helped you communicate more in your relationship?
Definitely it has, yeah. Because before, when you met me, you know, I was so shy, like extremely shy. Like, I'll be afraid to talk to anybody, I mean, of the opposite sex.
Right.
And then, I don't know, like after that, the not giving an F attitude has definitely helped me out.
How do you think your confidence, because when I met you, you were sleeping on the radio station floor because you were just a youngin, because you were so passionate about radio. But what do you think your confidence has come from then, all these years? Is it?
I think the confidence has come with, like, something that I brought up on this podcast, I think, many times. The point where I figured out, hey, no matter what happens, I'm not going to die. It's not going to be the end of the world. You know, if, let's say, relationship wise, if I try to pursue somebody and then they're not into me, or they don't want to go out with me, nothing physically bad is going to happen to me. Maybe emotionally for a second, I'm like, oh, that sucks. I really, you know, would like to date that person. They're not into me, but physically nothing's going to be bad. I can move on and, you know.
Yeah, no, you're so right. You're not going to die, like, because we get so attached to rejection and how it feels. But realizing, like, let me feel the feelings and then keep going.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Menace. No problem. I love you.
I love you, too.
You are the best. Best of luck to you.
I miss you.
Thanks. Come back. I miss you so much. Stick around. You don't want to miss my chat with Dr. Drew about the history of Loveline and so much more. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread, so here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. SENS today and use code Emily. Reminiscing about the last 15 years at Sex with Emily, and what people always say, oh, what's the highlight or what do you remember? And I always think one of the highlights and honors was being chosen as the guest co-host on Loveline and getting to sit next to Dr. Drew Pinsky. And you know, it's interesting because when I was starting Sex with Emily in 2005, everyone's like, oh, well, is it like Loveline? And Loveline had already been around that time for, I don't know, I guess 20 years. And it was pretty amazing because there wasn't a lot of people talking about sex. And then to get to sit there was just an incredible experience and opportunity. Right now, you can check out all of his podcasts and shows at drdrew.com. Subscribe to the Dr. Drew After Dark podcast on your mom's house YouTube channel and get the Adam and Drew Show on iTunes and catch up with your questions live streaming on Dose of Dr. Drew at drdrew.tv. And don't forget to get up to the minute news and special report on Fox LA Live at 7 p.m. 5 days a week with Alex Michelson. All right, enjoy the interview. Drew.
Emily.
Dr. Drew Pinsky, good to see you.
Good to see you too.
I'm excited to talk to you. What's going on? Tell me.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hasn't it been 15 years?
It is my 15-year anniversary of Sex with Emily.
How insane is that? I'm flashing on a trip we took to Cabo San Lucas when we ran into fans of yours in Mexico. And the show was probably like 7 or 8 years old then, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And Drew, I was flashing on Mexico too, thinking
we need to do that again.
Well, that too, we talk about that all the time, but just that I thought, well, Drew's obviously best known for Loveline. And I love that you remember that like one person came up to me, but everyone, this happened in Laguna Beach too. People stop in their cars. They literally, Dr. Drew. And then they're like, we love you. And I'm like, and then I would started polling people because it was like an event. I was like, how do you know Drew? They're like, oh, Teen Mom was my favorite. Oh, Celebrity Rehab.
Right.
I
like the impromptu poll, Emily.
Well, I do. I'm like, but how does everyone?
You became like a reporter. You're like, exactly where did you?
I just wanted to know. I was like, how do all these people from all different walks of life and all different like genders and all different, you know, places, I was like, how? And it's, you've done so much. But I was reminiscing too over this 15 years as I've been doing, because it's the podcast started 15 years ago. And then when I did meet you, I moved here in 2012.
Yeah.
And I had that incredible opportunity to join Loveline as a guest co-host. And it was great, but it was like, can you imagine like the intimidation too? Because that was like the only place that people had ever, that there'd been a show about sex and talking about sex.
True.
And then to meet you, who I'd been following and listening to Loveline, and it was just such an honor. It was such a high point of my career. Like I think about that as being like, wow, I don't even think we talked much the first few months. Cause I was like, what can I say that Drew can't
You
say.
Fit right in. Don't be silly. If you were anxious, it did not come across.
Well, I was just chill. I didn't want to get in your way and be like, Dr. Drew, how can I? No, but it was fun. I mean, and then thinking about like Loveline really did set the precedent for this, for what I could do.
Well, right. I mean, it was it's interesting now to talk about the history. You don't even know some of this. Now it's going to
tell me everything.
Sense to
I would love to know the history of Loveline.
In 1983, there was a certain Anthony Fauci. Now you guys all know Anthony Fauci,
now
but in 83,
do.
He was championing, he was coaching up all us young physicians to go out there and educate about the transmission of what was then called HTLV-3, you now know as HIV. We had just stopped calling it GRIDS and started calling it AIDS. The term safe sex hadn't been invented yet. And he was like, there are going to be 10 million dead. He kept saying that, 10 million dead, 10 million dead if we don't do something. And so it was that playing in my head that was sort of my primary motivation to go on the radio.
Wow.
I had this opportunity and I thought, all right, we're going to the show late in the night. I'm, you know, look into it. We got to get out there and talk about this. And here were these unbelievable calls coming in for the middle of the night to a rock radio station. And I thought, oh my God, they're coming here for health information. I've got to keep coming back. And they didn't know, they'd never heard of HIV or HTLV-3 okay. or they were, the most they were preoccupied with was herpes. All the other sexually transmitted diseases were veiled under this term called venereal diseases. And they all had Latin names. We called back in, you know, in the 70s, we called yeast infections, manilliasis, you know, everything had a bizarre name. So people wouldn't dare think about doing things that expose them to these horrific sounding illnesses that, by the way, through human history were fatal. They potentially be fatal, at least. I mean, if you had a urinary tract infection in the 15th century, you could die. If you developed gonorrhea, you'd get pelvic inflammatory disease, you would die. If you develop prostatitis from your non-gonococcal urethritis, you could end up permanently impaired or even dead and septic. So people, you know, when people think about the social mores around sexuality, for me, it was all very biological. It's like, of course, you understand, you're a parent and you know these incredible drives these young kids are having. You're going to tell those kids, that's going to kill you if you do it. And they were right for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Whenever people like compare humans to bonobo monkeys, the first thing I say is bonobos don't get sexually transmitted diseases.
Right.
So they don't get them. So they don't have the consequences from sexuality that humans have.
That's true. And
the consequences, including pregnancy itself, which we got command over in the 60s and 70s as well. Once we had antibiotics, once we had birth control pills, we could start to deal with that biology. Then we didn't know how to deal with our relationships. And that's what I was dealing with in the 80s, was that people did not know what to do with themselves now that there was this unrestrained sexuality. And by the way, this deadly disease was burgeoning around the corner.
Wow. I mean, okay, there's a lot to unpack there. Because first off, of course, they were blaming it on the vaginas. It was a venereal disease. Nothing to do with the penises.
Is venereal the derivative of?
I think it is, isn't it?
No, I think it's more like venal. More like
okay,
a sinful,
fine.
Like
I just heard that. Okay, Cam, maybe I'm wrong.
Let me see. Let me look up.
I feel like it is. And then
it might be.
I just thought about when you said it. I was like, ah, shit. And then also, you say the bonobos don't get STDs. What about the koala bears who are now getting chlamydia?
Oh yeah, but they chlamydia has, there's many different kinds of chlamydia.
Okay,
right?
So it's not.
Yeah, there's chlamydia that gets, that causes pneumonia.
Okay, do you see those little faces? I was like, oh God, what are the koala bears doing?
So all the different definitions are related to intercourse. That's it. Venere means related. Derivation. Latin of venere, sexual love.
I thought it was vagina.
Stems from sexual charm. See Venus. So there's the woman.
See,
the woman involved.
It's always the woman.
Yeah, it's always.
That's all I'm saying.
Which I don't disagree with you on that.
I know. Okay, that's all I heard.
Women take the hit for everything.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I know. So venereal to me was like venere. It just was very like, not just because of the V, but like it was a little bit like women, your vagina is doing it. So Drew, let's go back to 83. Amazing that was Fauci's role. I mean.
He was big in the CDC then. Yeah. UC San Francisco. And he really got into my skin. I took it very seriously.
Look what you did, though, Drew, because it's 1983. And if I recall, part of the story is that you were a young med student sitting there at Loveline at K-Rock with your medical journals.
First day, I brought all my textbooks.
Your textbooks. Since I met your textbooks.
I brought gynecology and infectious disease textbooks. And I was like, oh, my God.
And you're flipping through. Yeah, you're like, how do I answer this? So it was a lot about, you know, HIV.
Well, the good news is I didn't even open them. I was worried that I'd have to. But this was the naive idea. I was like, oh, my God, these kids don't get the most basic thing. This is all so easy. If I just sit here and answer the question, no one has told them about it. They can understand this. It's easy. And that was part of my naive idea. The piece that everyone missed on Loveline, that for most of its journey, it was a medical show. The medical issues of adolescents and young adults, medical issues for them, reproductive health, sexual health, mental health, substances, that's their predominant medical issues.
But the thing is, because that's how, when we do teach sex ed, it's mostly about that. It's about don't get pregnant, don't get an STD, it's fear-based, abstinence-based. But that's still what's going on today in 2020. So in a way, I don't know that it's that our youth are better set up.
Well, it's you're there, thank God, and then the internet is there, and the internet fuels something called the Dunning-Kruger effect. Do you know what that is?
No, but tell me everything.
Dunning-Kruger, tell me more. Dunning-Kruger are two psychologists that coined a term for a syndrome that essentially explains why somebody can get up and try out for American Idol and sound like shit. And then walk off the set and go, I was great. I was awesome. That's Dunning-Kruger. And Dunning-Kruger is now ruling the land because Dunning-Kruger is essentially believing that you have an expertise and knowledge in something you know very little about.
Huh.
Got it?
Okay.
So you go, you look up an STD online, you Google it. I'm now an expert in chlamydia. You're not. And it's interesting. Knowledge follows a specific pattern. It goes from You're super confident in what you know. Then as you really learn more about it, you hit a valley and you go, oh, I don't know anything. Yeah. You stay there for a while until you actually start knowing something. And then you come back out and then you kind of, then many times you feel like an imposter because it's too much to know.
Well, right.
Yeah.
That's so true. I mean, I never feel like I know everything. I mean, I think imposter syndrome is like, you know, it's like, God, there's just so much. You're always learning.
Well, that's a sign of wisdom. Knowing that you don't know a lot, it's a solid thing. It's the opposite of Dunning-Kruger. Dunning-Kruger is it's an overconfidence in knowing stuff, and the internet has given us that. So you're dealing in your show. You have some wisdom because you've been talking to people about these things, hearing how it actually affects in the human condition.
Yeah.
And somebody Googles it and then wants to tell you about what they know
to
be true.
That's annoying. That's like narcissism too, right? Or like
yes, ma'am.
Grandeur.
That's the other thing. That's the other thing. That's a pandemic.
That is a pandemic, right?
Trauma, talk about narcissism, Dunning-Kruger.
Well, trauma is trending too. It really is. I mean, that's where it's shifted right now is that we are all, it is trending. People are like, I've got trauma. I think there's some truth to that. The more I've gone deeper into trauma work myself, mm-hmm. we've talked about the EMDR on your show, mm-hmm. Which everyone has to check out because I love your live streaming show every night, Dose of Dr. Drew on drdrewtv.com.
You can get it YouTube/Dr. Drew, Facebook/Dr. Drew. Just go to drdrew.com.
I see you every night.
I know it's been great. And that platform is now going to get distributed in India. And we're going to see if we can build a relationship with people in South Asia too. I'm fascinated by that.
Because the Indian audience in India right now, there really has been in the last few years, a really big interest in sex, sexual health, all that stuff. That's great.
In mental health. So I want to sort of branch out and see what's going on in the world, frankly.
Yeah. So, oh my God. I would love to, I want to follow with you on that journey. So anyway, we talked about this on your show a few weeks ago, but it's just like there, I think trauma, we used to think, well, just Vietnam, you know, it was the war vets was a trauma or major abuse or a car accident. And then you're like, no, complex PT. We have little micro traumas throughout our life. And then you're like, those build up and you get the same symptoms of someone in trauma because their brains get wired.
That's right. It's an issue of brain wiring and brain-body integration. Brain integration, brain-body integration that gets off. That optimally the brain has to be an integrated system and the body has to be integrated with it. And trauma fractures it. It divides off pieces. And when we're really worried about trauma, we're worried about not so much, though this is certainly something very important, but we're not talking about combat trauma. We're not talking about earthquakes. We're not talking about 9/11. Those are traumas, don't get me wrong. But the predominant trauma we're talking about is interpersonal trauma, particularly trauma at the hands of people for whom you're supposed to trust and feel safe with. That's a shattering kind of trauma.
Right. Our primary caregivers who did not care. And did not give in the way that we
or didn't protect us from or whatever it is. There's a lot of variation.
We didn't feel safe, right?
Very common, very common. And the reality is we need long periods of time with those attachments to build that integrated regulatory system I was talking about. And if you get traumatized, you exit, you leave that frame and you never go back. And so you end up being dysregulated and looking for ways to regulate yourself. And in my world, that's drugs and alcohol.
Yes, it is.
Sex can be one of those things.
Sex addiction, drugs and alcohol. Yeah, exactly. And then you keep kind of looking for like a different, then you're attracted to partners that we think is going to be that.
Well, that's two things. One is the draw to the sexuality as a drug, but then we do this crazy effed up thing humans do, which is when we've been traumatized, we repeat the trauma. and we look, and then we are attracted to. So people never talk about where attractions come from, right?
Let's do it.
Yeah, they always go attractions. Can't explain that. Nope. Turns out you can. And we have sort of, some people call it love maps, or some theorists call it that. Others call it sort of fittedness and attachment fittedness. But one of the really characteristic recreations we pursue as humans is when there's been a traumatic rupture. We try to seek that out again in our adult life. Some people say it's an attempt to sort of solve that rupture or to make it whole once and for all. We're not aware we're doing it. We just get attracted to people and places that are exactly like the rupture. And then,
so
of course,
give me an example.
The classic thing. And then classic thing is, I have an abusive alcoholic father who abandons me when I'm 4. Then magically, I'm now a 20-year-old female, and I keep dating the same kind of guy. I keep doing it. This last one, I swear to you, he never drank. He told me there was no alcoholism in his family, and he was looking for a firm commitment that was everything to him. And a year later, he was drinking, and he left me. Here's what the thing about attractions. We are perfect instruments. And if you have that pattern, and you've done it 2 or 3 times, and you're attracted to somebody, I don't care what package they come in, they will be that person again until you do some trauma work, until you sort of reintegrate stuff.
As you would say, their picker's broken.
Picker's broken.
I love that, Drew. Yeah, like I said, broken. I always, it's true though. Like, and we're like, what is it? And that's the kind of the going deeper into that.
How is all this going on in COVID? What are you finding?
Well, I'm finding that in COVID, people are, so they're still finding ways to have sex.
Of course.
You know, there are people, like, they're going to concerts in whatever state they live in. People are still.
Concerts?
Well, yeah. Did you see something in the news? There's some crowded. There was some concert, like the Chainsaws or something. I don't know. I saw things like that. But people, the dating apps are flourishing right now.
Oh, interesting.
Because what I love is that now they have like video chat on all the apps. And so now I think always made sense.
Smart.
Yeah, because why would you can't, you don't want to go across town. And you used to have to be going on a date with someone. You're like, God, I met you in person. So that's happening. And what I also love is that's happening is that people are taking more courtships back. So people are actually taking time to get to know someone because
that's very positive. I've always said, been saying this for years, that we need to call it something other than courtship, because somehow that's some sort of
antiquated.
And even the term dating is antiquated. But yes, we need some sort of evaluative process.
That's the word.
Sort of time for evaluation. I know millennials got to come up with it.
They'll do it. Let's ask your kids. But the other thing is that in this courtship process, now it's like people never wanted to talk about, like, have you been tested? What's your STDs? And I think now we're like, have you been COVID tested? Have you been STD tested? Like, let's just add, will you wear a mask? It's all sexual.
I wondered if I haven't had enough conversation with people in the age of COVID to find this. And you tell me if this is true. If the more chronic STDs have now diminished in their importance because of COVID, know what I'm saying?
There's like a hierarchy.
Somebody to go, I've had herpes. I take whatever. And I've suppressed it. Is that a concern to you? Like, do you have COVID?
That's what I'm saying.
Do you have HIV? Do you have COVID? Let's talk about important things. I'm wondering if that's happening out there. I noticed there's that series, Work in Progress, where that was sort of portrayed in one of the relationships in that series. And I thought, that's interesting. I'm watching Indian Matchmaker.
I've heard it's amazing. I haven't seen it.
You have to see it first. I wouldn't call it amazing. I would just call it intriguing. Intriguing.
Because why?
90-Day Fiancé is amazing. Indian Matchmaker is intriguing.
Amazing because do you think that we should be in arranged marriages?
Well, that's what it sort of proposes. But it has a wrinkle to it. It proposes that a quote love marriage and a quote arranged marriage are just two sides of the same coin. And there was just some data out today. I think it came out in Newsweek. It was some public article I read on the web that said that process is more important in relationship happiness than individual characteristics. Isn't that interesting?
I saw that too. Yeah. It's about the relationship itself is its own.
Yeah. A way to say that. They didn't say it in the article. I've heard it before said this way. And I've remembered it for years because I thought it was something to it. Process, meaning the dynamic of how you work through and do your relationship dynamics, the process of that is more important than the individual characteristics you start with. Not that the individual characteristics aren't important, they are, but that the process is somewhat more important. And I, you know, it's another way of saying a sort of simplistic version of that is, hey, when you fight and somebody wins, the relationship loses. Don't you need a better process than that?
So resolving conflicts better, having better
communication. Well, whatever that, you know, that's one piece of process.
Well, process, right? Would be like how, I always think about it's conflicts. Like, how do you communicate when things go bad so you don't get into the contempt phase, like the Gottman, like you don't get into hating each other. What's your process for dealing with who's taking out the trash, how you're raising kids?
Exactly. And how do you reach a consensus, and how do you express and receive love? I mean, that's ultimately what that is.
The love, right? Languages.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've just quoted three different theories there, the Gottman, the love language, and you said even another one there. And those are people who have struggled with this. Those are ways of trying to help you understand how to do that.
This is why I try to think, you know, we're always coming up with ways to help people. It's like, is there some, like, maybe it's a dating app and you take the love language quiz, you take you look at your trauma history, like that you have a battery of tests to figure out. No.
No.
Because this is the one thing, because you get together and
this is one of the reasons I was thinking about the Indian matchmaker.
Tell me,
this is going to pay off in a second. Which is that this is going to be so. I'm going to go down a zigzag.
You know, I can follow.
So the dating apps have always been trying to figure that out, right? They've been trying to come up with the ultimate test. Then they keep finding out the same thing. You can't predict it. There's so many things that go on between people when they meet. Our bodies communicate in literally hundreds of millions of units of some sort of back and forth that we are just not aware of.
Right.
So when somebody says they have chemistry, we don't even know what the hell we're really talking about. And right. No one's been able to really nail that down in any meaningful way. I just look at it as two bodies in space that have a fittedness associated with certain kinds of attractions that fit with their traumas and fit with their love mats and fit with all these things. But it's something far more. It's something far, when you really have that kind of chemistry, it's something far more. And so the reason I was thinking of it, and I'm not advocating any of what I'm about to say, the Indian matchmaker tries to figure out ways to she's not explicit about it during the series, but I know this is what she's doing. She's trying to increase the probability that happens. And she does it through these kinds of matching systems and goes into astrology and tries to match them. And she went to a guy, and this intrigued the hell out of me, who was a, quote, face reader. Oh. Do these faces go together? Will this face be attracted to this face? I thought, that is fascinating that there's somebody that thinks, first of all, that thinks they can do that. And secondly, he read the faces of all the people that were characters on the show that we had come to know by watching the show. And he was spot on with everybody.
Oh,
spot on. And I thought, wow, there's something, isn't that interesting?
So I want to look at
that. There's some facial features, there's body features, there's all these biological elements going that we just, well beyond our ability to predict at this point. Well, and that's why, by the way, therapy has to be done in person, because it's bodies exchanging information in space. But it's something more. It's something more. There's something more that's exchanged between bodies and space that we don't understand yet.
No, we don't. But then for some reason, when you said this, my mind, because chemistry, we try to explain it. Like some people, like Helen Fisher described it as like the stages of attraction, right? There's lust phase.
I know.
What say my head exploded is going back to the study of the process, right? It's actually about a process of couples coming together. It's about their relationship. That's the chemistry part. Like all of my stuff and all of your stuff and whatever we create creates a third entity. And that third entity is your relationship.
Right.
And then absolutely. That is what we, so even if their faces match, I don't know how far along the episode's gone. And like, do we know that all this stuff that they created, that then you got to sort out what that makes? Because I might be a great match with someone, or I might not be, but they go with someone else who's similar to me. They have a great, their chemistry, literally it's chemistry that makes so much sense.
And again, people have been trying to make something of the pheromones and make something of symmetry. And we try to make something of everything, and it all probably applies. But it's a large, understanding biology as I do, it's a bigger kind of thing.
It is. That's why it comes back to knowing, to having great to doing your work in therapy and having better communication skills. So when these things come up, you have words to put around it and say, like,
well, then now that's the process, right? Then now you're talking about the process piece, which is where the happiness comes in, theoretically. Because if you're super attracted and there's a trauma in the past that, you know, is fueling that attraction, even if it isn't a reenactment, let's say it's somebody, I always tell people, don't go for people that you're super attracted to if you're somebody that tends to reenact, because a super deep lightning bolt attraction is definitely a trauma reenactment. But a mild attraction, you can kind of work through that sometimes, or a moderate attraction even. And if you have a process, that can really work. And so, you know who told me that?
Wait
a
minute. Who?
Florence Henderson's husband, 30 years ago on Loveline. He was there with Florence Henderson. He was a
from
therapist.
The Brady Bunch. Florence Henderson was
the mom of the Blade. I'm pretty sure it was Florence Henderson. It wasn't Shirley Jones. It was Florence Henderson. And she was sitting there, and they were talking about this issue, and he just goes, if you have a process, that'll get you through it. And and it just stayed with me. It was 30 years ago.
That's amazing to me. Yeah. So, well, what you've often said too is that, like, that person that you just feel the fireworks with, and it's
be careful.
Walk the other way.
Like, well, not necessarily. I mean, if your pattern is the guys that you're super attracted to are, why do I keep getting attracted to that kind of guy? Because you're a perfect instrument. So next time it happens, don't give into it. But if you're not a trauma survivor and you're sort of, you know, it's interesting. People that don't have much psychopathology or trauma in childhood don't get those super intense attractions very much.
Right.
It's excessive, right? It's an excess.
It can be excess because we're trying to fill a hole.
There you go.
Fill my love tank. It's empty. Can you just make me feel good?
And most people would, me saying that, would go, oh, no, I felt that when I was 15. I was at this crush. Yeah. When you're 15. Right. That's normal. A couple rounds of that is normal in your late teens, but then it kind of tends to.
But if it
down.
Still happens, this is why, right. It's like the self-awareness of all of this. So, like, I want to go back to just real quick to Loveline, because I just find it so fascinating, Drew, because in me looking back 15 years, and now for you, it's 40 seconds.
Oh, my God.
Dude, so long. Dude. I'm just trying to understand, like, because it started with HIV, then it started with helping people understand, you know, health issues. But at the end of the day, like, I mean, that's a 3 decades. How? Oof. Because in some ways, I think in the 15 years, what's changed, what my friends say is porn's readily available since 2007 in the smartphones. Mm-hmm. So not only did we have no information, now we have misinformation that porn, people think that's real sex. And that's how it should happen.
We have distortions.
Yes.
We have distortions, and we have excessive stimulation at ages, at critical developmental ages, where we don't fully understand yet what that's going to do.
Right. So then there's that. There's still a lot of penis questions. There's still a lot of orgasm questions.
Always
the penis questions.
Always the orgasm question.
Always. But I'm wondering, what else, what did you see change? If you had to just say, like, in those decades?
It went from naive biology, which was misunderstood, to trauma. That on the 90s, that just became the theme. We were just, oh my God, everyone's a trauma survivor. It's like, it got to the point we were telling the phone screeners, like, please, not every call a trauma call.
Well, give me an example. Women or whoever had experienced anything, abusive
childhood,
rape.
Sexual abuse.
That's what I thought. It became very sexual abuse heavy. Okay.
And then with physical abuse and abandonment sort of streaming in between the sexual abuse stories. And the sexual abuse was out of control, I believe, in the 70s and 80s. It was insane. And so we started hearing about it in the 90s. And then we started hearing about the substances. And that is one of the consequences of trauma, right? Well, the pills was the late phase of that. It was sort of more alcohol polysubstance for a lot of years. And then it became the pills.
Okay. So that was really the evolution. And do you think that we're better set up? I mean, what's your hope for this? Like, what do you, what do you think?
Well, what do you think? You were there during those latter years.
Yeah. I feel like it was a lot of penis. It was a lot of erectile dysfunction. You know, at the end, you know, I know there was the young guys who were in their late teens, early 20s who were, they would get obsessed with a partner.
A lot of that stuff.
Couldn't get out of it. I don't hear that as much.
I think that's settling a little bit. I think.
Yeah. I don't hear it as much, but I feel like it was a lot of, and also, how do we keep it interesting? How do we spice it up?
Well, that's later, right? That's in marriages and long-term relationships and stuff, right?
But you know, I hear people in their 20s. I'm living with my boyfriend. It's been 6 months. We're having sex all the time. I'm 25. What do I do?
Oof. And it's they used to, or they still are, and she's not into it.
They're not into it because I believe that we move in with each other and we think it's going to still be so amazing. But the ingredients that are necessary to keep arousal is variety, spontaneity, you know, communication. And if you are just like, you're leaving the bathroom open with everything's a
sick,
that's not hot.
Yeah, it definitely it erodes. Things erode.
It does erode. So that's, I mean, I don't know how much is more. There's more porn reliance, like I said.
Interesting. Is that helping or hurting?
No, hurting. Well, you know what's
funny?
How about
are couples using much of it?
That's where I see the positive. So what I think is the positive of porn is when couples use it together and let's find this. I find this hot. Do you find this hot? Like, let's use this as an aid to arousal. Mm-hmm. But where the problems are is, you know, Drew, tell me, well, I want to ask your thing on this. I feel that when we would hear about erectile dysfunction a lot, it was mostly in older men. It was like 40s, 50s. It wasn't a 22-year-old.
It was biological in that age group. Right.
I don't remember hearing from men in their 20s and 30s. They had PE, premature ejaculation. Well, now, Drew, in the last year, it's funny because I can actually track in the last year and a half, all these young guys, the erectile dysfunction, can't stay hard, can't get hard, porn. Right. So now there's been some people like, oh, I don't want to blame porn. Well, there was recent studies that say, yeah, absolutely. Because because if that's how you are wiring yourself to be attracted to that, and you have to keep elevating and exposing yourself to more intense content, that's your habit, that's going to impact it. Because I was like,
absolutely.
Are we more anxious? Like, why are men experiencing it? So that's true too.
Maybe more anxious, more and less able to be intimate, maybe intimacy disorders. But I do think porn is a big issue. You know, I do this show, Dr. After Dark, where it's a show over at your mom's house, and me and Christina P, the comedian, we do this every week, and we take a lot of voice messages and videos and things. And we do, and these are, I guess, same kind of questions come as this. And I've been hearing a bit about that too. And it is always porn. And some of it, I can't say it's one specific thing about the porn either. Sometimes I think it's, oh my God, we exposed these males for, you know, 11 years of age, and it burned out their arousal systems at a young age or something. So they can't get as aroused late or something. Something about that early exposure overdid it. Or they're actively overdoing it now. And they need, as you said, they have to step up the intensity of what they're looking at. And the real world just can't do that in the real world, you know. Or the other thing is they're compulsively doing this and they just ain't got no more chi. They're just nothing left. Yeah, they're tapped out.
I'm out.
And by the way, I've seen that one a lot.
That they're saying that they're like, I'm masturbating 6 times a day. Is that a problem, Dr. Drew?
Why am I having difficulty performing with my girlfriend? Because, why don't we knock it down to once and see what happens?
Right, exactly. That's exactly it. Because they're just like, and then in this same study, again, these are people who answered a porn study, but they were saying that they're just not turned on by their partners anymore. But I think you can get it back. You just, again, it's like your habits. It's so easy just to go on, watch the porn, but to be like, you know what, right now I'm feeling this urge. Maybe I'll choose to turn towards my partner and see what I can do there rather than rely on the porn. But
we're mostly talking about men in this complaint, aren't
women,
we?
Women, yeah.
Women too. Okay.
No, I'm not hearing it from women. No, I'm hearing it from men, young men.
So I'm wondering if we've, because men are so visual, I wonder if they have literally visual expectations of their female partner that just can't, just not in reality.
No, and they didn't even know this thing was possible. But now that they had to keep escalating their arousal, they're like, well, she didn't. We had sex and she didn't show up with 6 friends and this stuff didn't happen. So that is the problem. But so let's talk about in the 90s, for example. I guess it's always variations. People were sort of 2000s. People were still they were still having problems like keeping up attraction, keeping fire. In this way now.
Not as bad. Yeah.
Can you imagine 22 and you can't.
Yeah. That's bizarre. That's bizarre. And in the past, the issue was that there was sort of disorders of intimacy getting in the way. People remember all that?
Yes.
They weren't comfortable close. They were anxious close. They couldn't sustain close. They had a lot of stuff going on in closeness. That was the big problem back in the 90s and even into the 2000s. There wasn't this drug intervening.
It's a drug between, Drew, right?
Yeah, between the partners. Yeah, yeah.
Well, with all of the your work in substance abuse, would you add that to the other, like, those drugs, alcohol, sex?
Oh, 100%.
Sex and porn being
100%. That's in fact, when you do your first step on a 12-step program, you have to do a sexual inventory, because that's always part of the deal.
So what do we do about this? What would you say? Is it sort of like decreasing your use?
Yeah, you got it. The screen. I think we will look at these screens the way we look at tobacco in about 10 years, maybe 20 years.
Interesting.
The problem is we're so much more dependent on the screen than tobacco for so much of our life. I don't know how we reconcile that. I don't know.
I don't either.
I really don't.
Do I need to know what's happening every 2 seconds on my phone?
And I don't want to be us to be accused of saying that porn's bad or that people shouldn't
use
it. We're not at all. We're just saying that it's having an effect on functioning, and we'd like to see that.
It's adjusted. Awareness. I'm not the one who's like, don't do this and don't. I'm the last person people I want to come to feel like she's going to judge me. Not at all.
Right.
I just want people to have the information just to know.
Well, like, and that
we're finding
that
this now.
It's again, like if you were saying, you know, should I drink alcohol? Should I smoke pot? I go, well, what's your family history? You had any trauma? Just assess yourself. And I'm not saying, hey, don't do that. I'm saying, well, if you start doing it and you feel a little momentum, maybe that's the time to get it under control before it's out of control.
Right. Stick around after this word from our sponsors for more of my interview with Dr. Drupinsky.
How are you? By the way, we haven't gotten there yet.
Okay, I'm good. You know,
I'm depressed as hell with this COVID thing. I'm depressed, man.
Okay, because you're such a doer meter. You're so want to. Is that what it is? Like being out.
My life was stolen from me. We had a whole 6 months of stuff going on that I was looking forward to that just got ripped
like
off.
What? Like personal, professional,
travel, and speaking, and we were going to go do some stuff. Susan and I were going to go do some traveling and stuff. We just had a ton of stuff we were going to go do and engage. Things I was really looking forward to.
Yeah.
And just sorry, you're going to be broadcasting in your basement for the next.
Is that where you are now? Because you look amazing.
It's sort of this used to be the kids' playroom, and so throughout this whole pandemic, I felt like I was the French Resistance broadcasting out of the basement, you know, just trying to give some information to people, make myself useful.
You've done a lot.
I felt useless.
I know,
And I really knew I was depressed when, because I have low self-esteem, I do this thing where I beat myself up all the time.
Wow.
And I have like no income all of a sudden, and I needed new car tires. I'm like, you don't deserve car tires. You're going to drive these tires until you're riding on the rims, which I did. And then I still had trouble. I had trouble like just going to get the tires. And one day I was like, I need to get some tires. What am I doing? I went and I got them. No problem. And I thought, I was so depressed. I couldn't initiate anything.
Wow.
I couldn't get anything done.
Right.
I wasn't sad. I wasn't aware that I just knew I wasn't right for sure.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh boy, that's a sign that things were not right.
That is a sign. The executive functioning of being able to decide what's important, what's not.
Decision-making and initiating behavior, both signs of depression. So
yes, absolutely. I mean, what have you done for that? I mean, yeah, same, but I think that's my, I always have.
That's your baseline?
That's your baseline. Like, to me, this is like, okay, fine. Shit's not going to work out the way it's supposed to. I'm fine. This is my, tell me something that give me some new information.
Good resiliency. Good for you.
I'm very resilient. I have to say that's tenacity. Like when shit's thrown your way your whole life, I am very resilient. Like to me,
it's one of the benefits.
Yeah. It's funny, dude, with the self-esteem. It's like, oh God, that's a whole other thing. How do you have the confidence and how do you build it? I think it's,
Confidence is not esteem. You know, esteem is set by about age five. Mm. It's just, it's very hard to change. It essentially doesn't change. And I've always, late in my life, most way through my life, I've felt it was an asset to have low self-esteem because I had enough therapy that it doesn't bother me. I don't feel bad about myself though when I get into moods like I was in, I was doing that, but I don't normally feel bad about myself. But because I have low self-esteem, I assume if something happens in my life, it's my fault.
Yeah.
So I better take an inventory, figure out what's going on and figure out what I can do. I take responsibility for it, that kind of thing. And that's a healthy way to approach that.
That is really
That's all
healthy.
You can control is stuff in
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. But just even reckoning, well, first of all, just saying that it's a low self-esteem, it's a negative self-talk. I do the same thing, as you know, like everything's my fault. I beat myself up. I'm not like angry at the world and blaming everyone else. I'm like, this must be my problem. What did I do again?
That's right.
Which I guess that's you know, to know
it's
that.
Good. It's good. It's good until you beat yourself up. So like I said, I was punishing myself by risking my life on bald tires. But you said you beat yourself up as part of your baseline, and I actually don't do that. I don't
right.
do that.
Okay. Well, you're lucky. You're better.
So how are you?
No, I'm good. Okay. So to be honest,
I asked you how you are and talked about myself.
No, but Drew, thank you for sharing that. That is very real. And I think that helps people. Like, just they think you're a doctor. Drew's always fine. You know, I'm a sex expert. I'm over having a great relationship and crazy sex. No sex since COVID.
Ooh, brutal.
Well, once. No.
Good thing you have that closet of toys.
I've got a lot of toys. No, I did have sex once, but whatever, one time. Here's the thing. For me, I think what's been good about it, it's been hard. I love people. Like, I love being around my team and my friends.
Me too.
And
yep, me too.
That's been very hard. And at home, I didn't even have a desk here. I was like, my home will be a sanctuary. It will not be a place for work. So that's what, and doing the radio show every night. I love being on the radio. You know, the energy of it. I'm like, now I get why Drew did it every night. Yeah. And so that's been hard. But what's been good for me is that it's forced to slow down. Like, I can't be running around and doing appointments. I can't distract myself and going to stores. And so what I've been able to do is really able to look at my work and my people around me. And we were able to like restructure my entire team and actually bring in people who have done the jobs before. We were just at a place that I was like in this, you know, I was way busy and understaffed. So I didn't have the right support, and my executive functioning is not my strong suit ever. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't a great manager. I was managing like 7 people. And
I remember.
It wasn't good. I mean, so that was hard, but now I've gotten in some really great people and advisors and people so I could actually slow down and make decisions based on, you know, just what the reality is and what I actually want to do. But I'm fucking over it. I want to go to Mexico with you and Susan.
Yeah. So you like to, I get it. So you see, so you're okay, you're better, but you like to move around.
Yeah. And I'm still doing therapy every week.
And be around people.
I want to be around people. And you also, what I've realized are the people that I like, who you want to see and who you don't want to see. Yeah. Like, who are the real people? Like, I miss like seeing you and Susan, even if it's on my Dr. Drew mug. But I miss you guys. Like, even in seeing you now, I get, this is why I know I love you. I love our friendship and our connection. I mean, I didn't see anyone the first year I was on Sirius. It was just, it was a lot, you know, it was too much. So now who do I want to see? Who's important to me? Who's not? But no, I'm ready to get out and see the world.
Yeah. Well, we got a few more months to go, I think.
Do you? What's your, what do you think?
Vaccine, man. I've signed up for 2 different phase 3 trials to be a human subject because I can't get the vaccine fast enough as far as I'm concerned. Oh. I think I have a certain amount of risk for COVID. I get beat up by viruses terribly. I had H1N1. I had that and it almost killed me.
Did?
Oh, it's brutal. That's back in 2009. And so I figure I'll get cytokine storm and all those good complications if I get it. So I would like that vaccine. I've been reading the technology. I love the biology. I'm into it. I want to be a part of moving this thing forward. So I've signed up. So
okay, that's great, Drew.
I'll be pissed if I get a placebo, but you know.
Okay, but you can't do that part of it. But you've been huge. Even at the beginning of COVID, you were there. I was watching you. I was stuck in Hawaii for a month.
You were?
Yeah, you didn't know this.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I was on a retreat March 9th to the 17th.
Oh my goodness.
In Maui. And on like the 14th, 15th thing, I was turning to you on the news, seeing what Drew was saying about it. And
this
it
was on the Channel 11 stuff?
Yeah.
I was on Fox 11. Oh my gosh.
Fox, all that. And I was like, oh shit, this is bad. And then, you know, 15th, 16th of March, things started closing down. And then my team was like, don't come back. Like, you don't need to. LA is really scary. And then I was like, huh, okay. So then
were you in an Airbnb or something?
I was at a retreat and then I moved to an Airbnb. So tell me right now the plans. Are you home then? You're just homebound?
I'm stuck. Every time we start making plans, it gets aborted. I'm going to Atlanta to give a talk in a week.
Okay, well,
I'm finally going to do that.
Good.
And we may go to New York to see what's going on there just to touch base and see our friends and stuff.
Okay.
Sort of see what's going on. I have a lot of faith in the mask. I believe mask and hand washing really does work.
Uh-huh.
I'll just give you a case in point. In Missouri, 2 women with active COVID, they didn't know they had it till the end of the week. They were hair stylists.
Oh, God.
And the 2 of them, with masks and proper technique and stuff, cut 140 people's hair during that week with active disease. How many people do you think caught it?
None.
Zero.
2. Wow.
Zero. except they went into the break room, took their masks off, and then their peers got it. So they took the mask off and transmitted.
But, this is so that's an amazing story.
It's a good case example of wear the mask. It doesn't transmit. Take the mask off. It transmits. So, I mean, it's essentially almost a double-blinded study, you know.
Wow. I just knew that it was none because I could tell the way you set it up. But that's...
Yeah, and that's pretty impressive. And so I'm not saying that it's zero with mask, but it's really pretty... It's pretty good. And so I wish people wouldn't... I deeply understand the feeling of not wanting to be muzzled and the government overreach, and they've been up your ass with everything. And they have been. But don't draw the line at the mask. It's exactly the wrong place to draw the line. Draw the line at gatherings of 10 people. Go have 20 people gather and wear masks. And express your civil disobedience that way. So,
but wear the mask. Thank you, Drew. That's very, very helpful. Because you're right. Like, just it's not that hard. And I feel like if they're not going to wear a mask, they're not going to wear a condom either. Just remember that. Well, they're not going to care about your sexual health.
I'm telling you that the way public health messaging goes is if you're inconsistent, hypocritical, or exaggerate, you will lose the public for many generations. I call it the reefer madness syndrome. If you exaggerate the effects of pot, they don't want to talk to you about pot anymore. Back in the HIV epidemic, we were exaggerating the risks. It's kind of known.
I remember. I grew up. Right? I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, you don't have sex with whoever you have sex with. You're not just having sex with them. You're having sex with everybody they ever had sex with. Remember that aphorism? Yeah. Not just straight people, gay people. It's everybody. You're going to get it. We just chanted about it. We exaggerated it because we were convinced there were going to be 10 million dead, and we didn't want that to happen. But because we exaggerated, you can't get somebody to wear a condom today. That is the left. That's the legacy of us exaggerating. Wow. And so now here in COVID, we have just confused, distorted, messed up health messaging. Wear a mask. Don't wear a mask. Mask is the worst thing. Mask is the best thing. You can isolate in place unless you're on a demonstration. Then you can gather by the tens of thousands.
We have a demonstration.
But it's your First Amendment, except if it's religious. Then we're not going to protect your religious rights. We're only going to protect your right. I mean, it's just so confusing. It's such a mess. And it's no wonder that people just go, I'm out. Stop. Right. I can't trust anything they say. And that's a fault of their communication. And also... Their knowledge base. They claim to be following science. They're not. These leaders aren't used to making risk reward decisions. The physicians do that. We know that when we make an aggressive treatment in one direction, we're going to cause untoward consequences in another. So here we are now with all the mental health stuff going out of control, depression, anxiety, developmental issues in adolescents, substance use out of control, opiate overdoses spiking again, alcoholism.
He is right, Drew. I was going to ask you about
that. Out of control. And they believe now, and the other thing, people were delaying coming in for their medical treatment, so now they're coming in with greater complications and overwhelming the hospitals. When you hear a hospital is overwhelmed, it's not COVID. It's the delayed medical treatments that we normally were treating that people waited to come in, now are coming in sick. So I read an article yesterday that said the deaths from delay in treatment, mental health consequences, substance is going to far exceed COVID deaths. That's the current prediction.
So. True. So, and then you're probably seeing this too. There is a rise in mental health issues for sure.
Wild. And we don't yet even know the 8 to 15-year-old age group what the full effect is going to be because those kids are traumatized by this.
They are. Their friends are in the room looking at porn. That's how I picture it.
they probably are. It's probably going to make that problem 10 times worse.
Yeah, because their parents are like, great. I mean, all my friends are like, yeah, my kid's on the screen 12 hours a day. Like, I can't anymore. They're like, I got to figure out my life. Drew, how much longer? Because I want to know how many masks I need to have. Are we going to be wearing masks for another year?
Well, I kind of hope that we will adopt masks the way many of the Asian countries have, that if we get in the least bit ill with any kind of anything, we will all wear masks. I'm not saying the well people have to wear masks, but I'm hoping we'll adopt masks for illness if we're going to go out in the world. That would be nice. I will be wearing masks. It depends on what you do. If you go, I don't know how long the vaccine is going to take to work. My bet is it'll probably become available to healthcare providers in November and probably take 6 to 8 weeks to protect you before it's fully active. In the meantime, you're wearing masks. And if you don't get the vaccine, you should wear the mask. So you're going to see masks for the rest of the year, probably. Well, not the rest of the year, probably well into the spring, probably, right?
Just curious about that. Drew, this is so good. Wealth of information.
I was 1,000% full ahead on the vaccine until I spoke to a peer yesterday on my stream. Okay. You can see it. Dr. Kelly Victory is a very good physician. I spoke to on my stream. And she said, you know, I'm 60, whatever, and I'm a risk factor, but I don't know. I'm a little nervous about, you know, vaccines that haven't been a large track record on them. I think I'd rather just get the COVID. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Somebody who's treating it every day, she's an ER doctor, he feels that it, even in a moderate, modest risk category, that she is not afraid of it at all. She'd rather just get it than risk potential side effects from vaccine. It just sort of adjusted my thinking a little bit. I was like, oh, here's somebody that sees it a lot, isn't afraid of it, would take that 1% risk of, or, you know, 4% risk of complications, as opposed to kind of an unknown risk of vaccines. I'll take the risk of the vaccine personally. I'll happily take that, because my assessment of the biology is that risk is very small. And my assessment of my own risk for the COVID is that I'm probably going to get some trouble. Yeah. The H1N1 almost did me in.
But that's not necessarily related to who you are, where you are now, if that was in 2009.
I'm older, so it's going
to
be worse. And
you're
let me tell
so
you,
healthy. Look at you. You look amazing.
I know,
amazing.
But I've seen some terrible cases of coronavirus. Trust me. I people that have the insulin resistance, hypertension, central obesity, phospholipid syndrome, all that stuff, you check those boxes and you're over 70 or 75, it's brutal, brutal.
It really is.
Really brutal. Oh, my goodness. I'm in the sort of intermediate zone where I'm, you know, sort of controlled with the metabolic syndrome. I'm not yet 65, but I'm 60, you know, so it's...
Are we going to get another mug for your 65th birthday?
I hope not. I forbid to let her keep counting up. It's bad enough.
I love you guys. Okay. Since this is the 15th year anniversary, if you could go back and give yourself some relationship sex advice, and now you've been married for over, how many years now? Is it 30?
29, yeah.
29. What would you give yourself?
15 years ago. So that would make it like 2005, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah? We were deep in the, you know, adolescent child-rearing stuff, mm-hmm. sports and this and that and the other thing. I would actually tell myself, you're going to love this. Maybe I'd interview Susan. It's pretty good right now, but it's going to get better. The relationship part. Because we were holding up a lot back then. I mean, you know, triplets. And high school and private schools and football and baseball and ice skating and blah, 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 and get into college and then Susan had perimenopause then. You've heard me talk about this a lot.
Yeah, let's talk about
and
that.
And it was untreated, and we weren't clear what was going on, and so she had limited interest and stuff, and that was kind of painful. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't as good as it is now.
Right. You guys taught me about the bioidentical hormones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were like, this is what happens. So mm-hmm. it was very helpful for me to learn that. I wasn't there yet, but now it's very helpful.
Good. So good.
It gets better, but it gets better. And because you guys have had, you know, you learned to communicate about it too, but you're right. It does. And your kids, I mean, triplets, and they're not like passive children. They're all brilliant in their own way.
And they're all back. Well, two of them are back now living at our home, which is kind of crazy.
Are they? I want to come see you. Can I come over with a mask?
Yeah, come over anytime. Anytime. Just call Susan. Text her. It's not
your
call.
Of course. I know. Susan's in charge.
Anytime. Okay. And but I was just thinking this morning that I'm so grateful I kept this house that we reared them in, because we were just thinking, all right, we're going to get a condo somewhere. And because we have space for them, and it's easy to accommodate them. So
that's good. Yeah, I love your house. It feels like, and I just want to thank you too, Drew, because when I moved here, I didn't have a lot of close friends. I knew some people from college, but you and Susan have became like just truly close friends here, and really just made me feel home and comfortable. Like, we've spent Christmases together and gone away, and just, I don't know. I love you. I love you. I love you both. And I'm so grateful for your friendship and your just your support and just spending time with you.
And thank you to you for the same for me. I really do appreciate it. Really, because you've given me a lot of support and a lot of interesting times, and we've gone out and done fun stuff.
We have fun.
Bought a purse together.
We did. I took you shopping. I'm like, this is the most expensive thing I bought, but I deserve it. Should I do it? And you're like,
talked about all my neuroses around that. And it's like,
yeah, no, we go there. Yeah. We do, which I appreciate. So thank you, Drew. And goodbye. So we're going to do an intro for this. But Drew, drdrew.com, all the places.
Yeah, Facebook/Dr. Drew. It's all one word, D-R-D-R-E-W. YouTube, Dr. Drew. YouTube is where we're looking for people. And Dr. Drew.tv will give you a blast when we do that stream on a daily basis.
Okay.
and come be a part of it. I watch a chat. And sometimes we're taking calls too. We sort of change the name. We call it Ask Dr. Drew if I'm taking calls.
Okay.
The other one is just called Dose of Dr. Drew. But I watch your questions on a chat stream and try to address stuff.
Right away you can address it. That's amazing. Everyone go there. Check it out. Yeah. You're still working a lot, even though you're in.
No, this is all just keep me sane. I'm doing that Fox 11 show locally here. So think it's not Fox News, it's Fox.
Right.
Fox Network. So think Family Guy or Simpsons, that kind of Fox. And that has kept me sane. That is actually the one thing I've looked forward to.
Is that every night?
Weeknights at 7. And it's wow. Good. It's like kind of a hybrid newscast / talk show. And we it's local, right? So we talk a lot of Los Angeles leaders and things like that. And there's been a lot going on in LA.
What have I missed? I don't turn my TV on.
Well, I mean, the LA County Board of Supervisors and the sheriff are fighting, and there was these big demonstrations, and lots of cities had consequences from that in terms of how they managed it. And there's been a lot of stuff.
There's a lot. Now we've seen the paper, but now I'm going to watch you. I love watching you. I could watch you for hours.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Drew.
All right, Emily. See you soon. Okay.
Thank you for listening to Sex with Emily, where we teach you how to make your pleasure a priority. You can find me online at sexwithemily.com and on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Sex with Emily. Find me Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific on Sirius XM Stars for even more sex talk, calls, and interviews. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com. And don't forget, share the love, like, subscribe, and share. Because if you enjoyed the show, your partner or lover or best friend will too.